pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Well, thank everybody for coming out today. Let the record show that this meeting has been properly advertised and that there is a quorum. The entire Planning Commission are present: Harry Wilson, David King, Mike Paraskevich, Jim Dedes, Chuck McKinney, Don Gritty, and Marty Seitz. This is a public hearing of the Dewey Beach Planning Commission. The purpose of this meeting is to consider potential amendments to the zoning code of the town of Dewey Beach relating to sea and bay level rise as they affect Dewey Beach, and possible adaptations of strategies that the town might incorporate into its planning and zoning code to mitigate flood loss impact in the future. I'd like to start by approving the minutes of our last meeting, which occurred on July the 11th. Ed, the minutes have been forwarded to you in advance, and I presume everyone has read it. Does everyone have any issues with the minutes from the July 11th meeting? If not, can I have a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve the minutes of the July 11th meeting. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Thank you. I'd like to call your attention to the list of support materials at the back of the room. There's a sign-in sheet. I ask that everyone sign that. There is also the agenda. There is the draft minutes that we just approved from July 11th. There is the approved minutes from the first sea level rise hearing, which occurred on May 17th, 2013. The sea level rise scenario map of Dewey Beach prepared by the Delaware Coastal Programs. There is a sea level proposed adaptation toolkit prepared by PC Vice Chair David King. There is a draft of the proposed amendments to the Dewey Beach Zoning Code to mitigate flood loss impacts. There is a flood insurance risk map, and there is a list of definitions. How did we get here today? Well, we had a May 17th meeting, our first one on relating to sea level rise. And at that meeting, we discussed zoning changes in response to sea level rise. At that meeting, Vice Chair David King took it upon himself and volunteered to prepare a draft of the amendments from the discussions that we had at that May 17th meeting. And that is, I think, where we should start today. Unless anyone has an objection, we should go to the... it is entitled Sea Level Rise Input for August 7th Planning Commission meeting, which August 2nd, but we didn't have it then, so that is where I'd like to begin today. David, you prepared that. That you want to introduce that document?
Sure. So if people look at the sea level rise scenario, this color map, it lays out what parts of the town will be permanently inundated with half a meter or a meter and a meter and a half of sea level rise. Now the striking thing about this is that, when the sea level rises 3 feet or 1 meter, pretty much the entire bay side of town is going to be permanently inundated. And if we do nothing, that's going to have a serious impact, a negative impact on Dewey Beach. We don't know when the sea level rise is going to reach an incremental meter from where we are today. Everybody agrees that it's going to happen sometime, and the question is it going to happen in 20 years or 100 years or a longer time period than 100 years? And so we're trying to put in place some zoning that might be indexed to sea level rises of half a meter, things we do today, things we do in the future when the sea level has effectively risen half a meter when it's, you know, over a foot or 2 feet or half a meter and a meter. So that's some background and context. At the previous meeting, we talked a lot about lakeside building restriction zones. We have two lakes that abut Dewey Beach property, and Rehoboth recently passed a lakeside no building zone ordinance, and this in particular related to Silver Lake. And so this would amend our zoning code to introduce the same kind of lakeside building restrictions, and we talked some about this, and this was an attempt. So this is basically a second hearing on this issue, and this was an attempt to respond to the comments from the commission at the last meeting and move this forward to a point where we may actually be able to, at our next meeting, put forward a recommendation for an ordinance change. There was some discussion at the last meeting as to how one defines the, you know, the point at which you would have the 10-foot setback. Is it an elevation? Is it a defined set of spatial coordinates? And this basically goes back to saying the 10 feet from the undisturbed natural shoreline of Silver Lake and Lake Comegys. The level in the lake is maintained at an elevation of, I believe it's 6 feet, by a dam. And so if the sea level rises a foot or two or three, it's probably not going to affect the water, the height of the water in those lakes. And so unlike the bay, which goes up and down, these should be fairly fairly constant. So I put this forward to the commission. I don't know if you want me to, do you want me to read this or? Sure, I can.
I don't, yeah.
So this would be add a row labeled Lakeside No Build Zone in Table 2, bulk zoning standards in all districts, immediately after the minimum setback requirements row. And so it would be that the area within 10 feet of the undisturbed natural shoreline of Silver Lake and Lake Comegys is designated a no-build zone, see Section 18549F. And then under B, to add a new 18549F that says no permanent structure shall be constructed or placed within 10 feet of the undisturbed natural shoreline of Silver Lake or Lake Comegys, nor shall this buffer be used for a driveway or parking area. Temporary accessory structures such as a child's play area or shed, not exceeding 40 square feet in area or 8 feet in height, may be placed in this no-build zone, provided there is no excavation for footings or pilings or any in-ground structures such as a kiddie pool, and that no portion of this area is regraded or paved. This restriction shall supersede any provision of this code which might otherwise permit a structure or a part of a structure, projection from a structure, fence or screen to occupy any portion of the required no-build buffer zone. And then under that, a sub A, no more than 10% of this no-build zone shall be covered with such accessory structures as mentioned above. All remaining areas of this no-build zone shall be left open to the sky and remain a natural area as defined in Section 116 of the Dewey Beach Municipal Code and a subsection B. Nourishment or renourishment of an existing lakeside shoreline shall be prohibited, as shall grading or paving of any portion of the above-defined lakeside no-build zone or any other action that might negatively affect surface water runoff or increased pollution of these lakes.
One thing I wanted to talk about before we get really rolling in that, and that is the triggers that we talked about. In your sea level adaptation toolkit, we were talking about what's the term for it? Rolling something?
Rolling setbacks?
Yeah, roll. Maybe setbacks. But what I'm getting at is that is in somewhere I've read that the that we're going to implement these changes that we're going to be talking about here, not on a timeline of, in terms of years, but in a timeline that has triggers that kick in when the sea level has actually risen a half a meter, 1 meter, 1.5 meters, etc. So as we go through these items that are possible amendments to the zoning code, wouldn't it be time to address that, where that threshold, where that trigger would kick in for that? I mean, for instance, this lakeside building restriction zone, that one would be something that we could do, you know, now. It wouldn't be any reason to trigger that down the road. However, some of these more stricter measures would be something that you'd want to, you know, trigger once the sea level has risen, for instance, you know, half a meter or something like that. Do we want to talk of that, discuss those issues on a point by point as we go through it, or do we want to address that at a later date?
Unless there are members of the audience here who are owners or are interested in this lakefront issue, I have a problem even talking about it because I don't believe that it was advertised clearly in part of the agenda that we're going to be creating a buffer zone along these lakes and bays rather than addressing sea level rise. And I'm certainly, you know, willing to listen to residents if they have input or concerns, but without proper notification, in my opinion, proper notification for people to understand what this hearing would be about, I would go under my own beliefs and, you know, give you my opinion based upon that. Because when I read the agenda of sea level rise, and now we're discussing, and we also just stated that the sea level rise is not going to affect the lakes. It's not an issue with the lakes. The maps don't show it as an issue. We're actually voting on a zoning change that hasn't been advertised, in my opinion, and I don't feel comfortable without giving the citizens proper notice.
That's a good point.
Good point. I'm willing to table this for the next meeting. Make sure it's advertised
properly. Broaden the description of the agenda item, you know.
I would think, because I have opinions, you know, about what was written in draft, but without hearing, you know, from the residents who might show up or might not show up, but that's, you know, there's a lot of property owners along the bay who this is going to affect. And we're putting a buffer zone into effect immediately, as you said, and there's a lot of property owners along the lakes that this is going to affect immediately. And, it's going to put an easement on their properties and limit what they can do. It's going to take away their property rights is what it really is. I think we should advertise it properly, or more clearly. I'm not saying properly, but clearer.
I had an impromptu meeting yesterday with Mike Carlson from Denver. They are looking at the zoning code dealing with flooding for, I think you mentioned, 46 localities. And they're going to be coming up with recommendations themselves sometime in late fall. Now, I talked about our meeting that we were having here, and he said, well, you should continue with your meeting, not by all means. But I think the collective thinking at that point when we talked was, you might want to hold back on making recommendations until we get a whole look at what the state has come back to recommend for changes. And he referred me to Senate Bill 64. It was done a couple years ago. I haven't looked at it. But he said they're following that too. So we might have to mirror all of this. And before we make massive recommendations to the council, to the commissioners, we might want to see what the state is also recommending at the same time for the localities. I just wanted to throw that out for the meeting today.
Well, I certainly don't look for this to be the last meeting. We're somewhere, we're in the beginning here, you know, so yeah, I don't think, and you know, Mike brought up a good point. This is a public hearing. It's been advertised as a public hearing. So as we go forward through here, I should have announced this at the beginning of the meeting, but in the terms of a public hearing, simply raise your hand as we talk and we discuss and include yourself in the discussion, and any statements that the public would like to make, certainly just raise your hand and we'll call on you to speak to it.
So let me just understand. I think if we were to follow what Mike had suggested, we would not be voting on any specific ordinance changes or recommendations we would make to the commissioners today.
I think we could vote on certain items, you know, or we could at least obtain consensuses of where we're at, so we can don't have to repeat our work, you know, so we can at least make some
right.
some judgments.
Yeah, I think we could have a workshop in the sense of, I mean, debating stuff or discussing stuff. Or I think David has some categorizations that he was thinking about, and I certainly appreciate hearing his input on that. Mm-hmm.
Well, I viewed essentially what's on this piece of paper, which is clearly a draft, as ideas that were put down that haven't been vetted through yeah. this commission yet, and that what we would do today is talk around them some more and decide if we wanted to push it forward or not. And if we wanted to push it forward, if we wanted to, you know, strengthen it, weaken it, add to it, subtract from it, some idea of what it might look like for the next time we came together. And I would assume we would at least discuss all of these items at least one more time when we have something a little more concrete in front of
us. So push it forward means have a meeting that Mike was talking about in the future with the notification.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't see anything coming out of this meeting that would, you know, go to the commission. To the town commissioners as a recommendation.
I understand what everybody's talking about, so thank you.
In fact, I mean, as Mike said, if we were going to push anything forward, we would have to, I believe, have a public hearing where the language of the ordinance that was being pushed forward would be, you know, published 2 weeks before the meeting and available for public comment.
So with that in mind, we're going to be tabling, or at least not discussing any further unless anybody has any discussion on the lakeside and the bayside no build zones. Would that be correct?
Do we have anything that deals with docks if somebody wants to build a dock?
I think we have no
I know
control about. Over docks. Isn't that
we don't, I think we've got
Chuck, isn't that a Denrick thing?
You do have language regarding bulkheads. Boathouses, piers, and bulkheads in your zoning, but ultimately you have to get permits from the state to build one, and they regulate, you know, the construction of it.
Yeah, there's language there talking about the docks, but the state controls everything from the tide line out, because we only get permits from Denver. Bill and I went through this what? Year and a half ago, 2 years ago, on the building permits out.
Okay.
Out on the board.
But you do have language in the zoning code for it. But it's superseded by what Denrick will allow you to do.
Does Denrick control the lake? May I understand? I'm just not sure about the lake.
I got no idea about the lake. No,
well, that's what I was asking. Yeah. That's where I was directing my question on the lakeside building restrictions.
If the shores next to it are considered wetland, non-tidal or tidal wetland, then Denrick and the Corps of Engineers would have jurisdiction over that area. I think the water itself or the bed of the water is probably an issue that I don't know the answer to, and you might have to go to a court decision of historic.
My only question was, if somebody wanted to build a dock, would this prohibit them based upon the language here?
Yes. The 10-foot buffer?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I know that in prohibit, they can build docks on Silver Lake.
Yes, it would prohibit them.
So our side, we would prohibit it. But it would be permissible on the prohibit side. I'd like to revisit that.
I mean, the intent in this was pretty much to mirror what Roe did.
Yeah. So.
If I'm not wrong about the whole situation, I just read it casually. I think there was an issue about how far the controversial property lines went out into the lake.
That's a different issue.
By their meets and bounds description in their deed, not where the natural water was. Because even along the bay or any body of water, your deed description, if you were to follow it or retrace it on land, could take you out into the water. But then the government comes in, whoever the jurisdiction is, comes in and tells you what they own now. And I think in Rehoboth that was the issue. They wanted to use their deed description versus where the water line was, and that's how they settled it.
Well, that's a different issue.
Right.
But I believe in, I mean, all I know is what I read in the paper a while back, that it's unclear who controls building of docks in Silver Lake on the Rehoboth side. It's like nobody does.
That's
Denrick doesn't. The Army Corps doesn't. The city doesn't.
I think they have to get a permit from the city.
I haven't seen any new docks in a long time, but I noticed that there is a gazebo at the end of a pier on Silver Lake that has had just a major renovation on it. So they must have had.
Well, my friend was over there. Mm-hmm. And they were telling us to get that.
Who did they get a permit from?
The city.
The city of Rehoboth.
So do you want to update?
I can see limiting structures. I could go along with that. But as far as saying no docks from those properties, I don't think that's appropriate.
You want to go to item 3?
Yes. I would agree too on that, the dock issue. I mean, they have their property on the bay, I mean, on the lake or bay,
definitely,
for a reason. And if they so choose, they should be able to, you know, within reason, get some type of permit to do something. So I would agree with that.
Now, I guess to help me in the next draft of this, in terms of docks, would you distinguish between docks built on pilings driven into the lake bed versus docks that are on pontoons?
I don't think I would really try to separate them. I refer to it as a dock because even if you have a floating dock, you've got to have a certain amount of piling to secure it in place. And it's got to be attached somewhere to the shore line.
Silent on that.
Yeah.
Is there a difference between a dock and a pier?
They're usually the end of the
What is that then?
Maritime law. It kind of all blends in together now. At one time, there was a difference because the pier line was very important determining how far the channel, or how far you could build a pier in reference to the channel, like in the Delaware River and things like that. But now, for what they're discussing, it all kind of blends in together, dock and pier. But of course, the Corps of Engineers and their jurisdiction, the pier line was established along their navigable waterways.
Look at
what we're discussing, it lands
in. Okay. So item 3 was, this was, a lot of the literature and current thinking about sea level rise is increasing the degree of freeboard that's embedded in the code, and this is something that DENREC and DEMA support doing, especially since with sea level rise, the intensity of storm wave action is increasing, and to some extent, freeboard helps mitigate the the unknown factors that contribute to flood height. And so, this is basically written to amend section 101-11 A and B of the town code to increase the freeboard requirements to 2 feet. FEMA defines freeboard as a factor of safety, usually expressed in feet above a flood level for purposes of floodplain management. Freeboard tends to compensate for the unknown factors that could contribute to flood heights greater than the height calculated for selected size flood and floodway conditions, such as wave action, bridge openings, and the hydrological effect of urbanization of the watershed. And so the proposed changes would be for residential structures to change it from 1 foot to 2 feet above the 100-year floodplain, and for non-residential structures, the same thing, to change it from 1 foot to 2 feet. Um, That becomes, I think, particularly important given the new flood maps, which redesignates part of the Bayside from an AE elevation 6 to an AE elevation 5, which basically would mean you could build your house at a lower base elevation. And if some people had done that recently and then Sandy came along, they would have had water in their first floor. So in those homes, this wouldn't have any effect on what you could build or couldn't build other than the code. On the housing still in the AE areas that are still designated AE6, it would mean that you would build it at an 8-foot elevation for the finished level of the first floor rather than a 7-foot elevation, which is what our current requirement would be.
If we propose something like that, we have a 35-foot height limit. So now we are squashing down by 1 foot. Are we going to raise it?
There is some precedent for that. The previous code had a provision for houses in the neighborhood residential district that if they were in a flood zone, they could build 1 extra foot in height, so they could build to 35 plus 1. And I believe, although that probably predates you as well, Bill, I mean, I believe that was put in place when the town went from the FEMA requirement to the FEMA plus 1 requirement for the first floor in a flood zone. We could go from FEMA plus 1 to FEMA plus 2 in the, this would be a this would be basically RB3 and the Bayside of the resort residential.
So there would be some provisions for the increase.
Well, there isn't in this suggestion, but
But there is.
We could put it in there if the consensus of the commission was to at least flag it and provide consideration to the commissioners that their envelope remains fixed.
Now, personally, I think it would be appropriate because we have one building, which is an office and 2 floors, and we, of course, stayed at the 35-foot height. It limited the roof design, first of all. It's a very shallow pitch. But by the time you get all of the ductwork and everything else in between floors, then your ceilings really aren't very tall. And if you take away another foot.
So you're talking about a residential and commercial mixed building, correct? It's got an office on the first floor.
Well,
residential on the second and third floor.
I mean, that's what we have, and that's 35 feet.
Okay.
But if we lost that 1 foot, then we would have lost several inches of ceiling space.
Well, that kind of goes with what my little note I have there. I didn't like B of this paragraph because it talks about non-residential structures, and I'm wondering if anyone feels the same way I do, that maybe we should just back off from commercial.
Well, this is what's currently in the code. And the only proposed change was, I mean, currently the code says for residential structures in 101.11, within the general floodplain area, the lowest floor, including the basement, of all new or substantially improved residential structures shall be elevated to at least, the code said, 1 foot above the 100-year flood elevation. And B is for non-residential structures, blah, 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 constructed at least, it said, 1 foot above the 100-year flood elevation, or such structures shall be designed and constructed so that the space enclosed shall remain completely dry during any flood up to that height. So the provisions are currently there for 1 foot. Residential structures have to be elevated, commercial structures, because the assumption is that they're larger and more complex, they don't have to necessarily be elevated, but they have to be waterproof. And so this is just...
I've been in a town that had to be waterproofed, and that's makes for some very ugly construction.
But in order for them to get FEMA insurance, they have to comply to their construction standards.
Yeah.
Or the town can't issue them a permit. You know, if they're cooperating with the FEMA's with the firm program, FEMA's program, so they have to either be waterproof or vented to handle a flood. Mm-hmm. But you know, maybe it's time for me to jump into this one again. What we're discussing now is really Chapter 101, floodplain management, and these changes we're talking about are not affected by this potential sea level rise, which was advertised. There's properties in town, if someone were to obtain a sea level rise map and say, well, my property's not being affected by it, I don't have to come to today's meeting, but the property is being affected by these revised floodplain maps, might be interested in knowing that we're voting on changing Chapter 101, because that's really what we're discussing now, is Chapter 101 of the county, of the city charter.
You know, if you look at the agenda, I mean, it says consider potential amendments to the zoning code, period.
Well,
and that what you're referring to is part of the zoning code.
To the zoning code of the town of Dill Beach relating to sea and bay sea level rise as they affect Dewey Beach. As a, you know, as a layperson to sea level rise, I would still think that sea level rise is a discussion. There's pros and there's cons. There's people who believe it, there's people who don't believe it, there's professionals. I'm not going to get into that discussion. But I think that there still could be, I mean, and we got time, there still could be a possibility that someone is looking at these maps or whatever and thinking, well, the sea level rise isn't going to bother me. But you, today, we're changing their floodplain ordinance, which is in the code, Chapter 101, and it's not advertised.
Mike, what are you saying specifically?
I'm saying that some of these things that we're discussing today weren't advertised enough to let the general public know about sea level. If you read the agenda or the advertisement, it says possible sea level rise.
I hear you, and I would agree with Harry that it's been advertised, but we're not making any changes at this point. We're just having a discussion.
Well, if we're just having a discussion, fine. We're not going to vote on changing Chapter 101 of floodplain management. And also, I think it's something that the planning of the commissioners have to direct us to discuss specifically, Chapter 101. You know, under Planning Commission, we had authority to discuss Chapter 185, the zoning, and any other matter that the town council directs us to. But, you know, I don't know, have they directed us to discuss floodplain management at this time? It's a lot of things we go along.
They've directed us to look at the whole thing, basically. They've directed us to look at everything.
Well, that's my question. If they direct us to look at everything, then I guess it's open. You know, it's open. We can look at everything.
I mean, I mean, yes, the free board is in 101.
Yeah.
But it's, I see it as, you know, as a...
Well, it's the free board's related to the
zoning issue.
Revised FEMA map.
And sea level rise. Which is...
I don't know about sea level rise, but the free board is... The free board is set based upon the elevations of this proposed map, which is a year or so away from even being accepted.
Correct.
And we know it's going to
change between
now and then.
But you know, everything I read about sea level rise is lots of municipalities are changing their codes to require that new structures, at least, and significant improvements are designed to have a sustainability for, you know, 30, 50, 75 years. And if the sea level is going to rise, you know, if one thinks it's going to rise a foot in 70 years, 50 years, then we are being foolish to not increase at least discuss increasing the free board by a foot. because those buildings are...
I think it's healthy for us and for the citizens of Dewey Beach to discuss these things. But I think we have to make sure that everyone is aware prior to what we're doing, what we're discussing and ultimately leading up to, so they can be involved from the beginning.
Right.
And I'm afraid now we're jumping into an ordinance that wasn't advertised that we're going to discuss.
Well, I don't see an ordinance coming out of us to the town commissioners for at least two more meetings.
Right, that's fine.
Right, and I will take your advice in the next meeting's advertisement agenda. We will really include everything so that it makes it is clear. So we will make those changes. We'll not, I've already made the notes and we'll make that happen for future meetings.
Okay, thank you.
Harry, I think you've got some comments.
I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am. Could you please state your name, please?
Ellen Schreiber. Right across the street. It's probably in here, and I will read this later, but could you tell me what agency is responsible for the official sea level measure?
That would be FEMA, I believe. Am I correct on that, David?
Or is it the U.S. Geological Survey people?
What do you mean by sea level? Right.
Because we're basing a lot on what the sea level measure is. And I just wonder who's...
You mean the projected sea level rise?
Not projected. Who measures?
The North American vertical datum is, I believe, maintained by the U.S. Geological Society.
It's called NAT 88. It's a datum that these latest...
And it's being changed.
It gets changed, right. But the United States government has established a datum, an elevation datum, that these maps are prepared on, and it's from one coast to the other coast so that we can relate, from one town to the other. They are the ones who've established the elevations, and right now the Homeland Security Department is in charge of FEMA. They are the ones who have established these flood maps and provide you with these flood maps. So it comes from Homeland Security through FEMA.
So there is one particular agency responsible for the measure, the standard. And how is that officially communicated?
Well, what's official about it is that the town wants to be wants to have access to the federal insurance, which is subsidized. They have to basically accept FEMA's program and comply with their maps showing where potential floods could rise at what heights and what types of constructions are allowed in these areas. The town inspector generally is the one who has to enforce these maps and these codes when new construction or alterations take place. If he doesn't, just like you might have read in the paper recently, Bowers Beach is under prohibition because they're not enforcing it, which means that the residents of Bowers Beach who apply for flood insurance or the ones who have flood insurance might not get subsidized insurance or reduction in their insurance rate. So if you want to pay, if you want to get subsidized insurance, you have to agree to what they put out.
Yeah, no, I understand that a lot relies on it. That's why I just want to make sure who's doing that measure. Is it consistent? Is it well communicated?
Starts with Homeland Security, goes to FEMA.
Yes, sir, in the back of the room.
Hi, David Thomas here, 1 Reed Street. Thank you for having this meeting today. I want to express why I was drawn to it. I think it's a good thing. I was gratified to hear that the maps have a year before they're finalized, because I think it's important that we get into the game. And I don't know what the engineering and technical tweaks are in terms of freeboard or this or that, but I can imagine that there's a bunch of them. And one of the things that concerns me, and I'm sorry that I didn't clip the article out, but if you are in a VE zone, there was a longer article, I believe, in the New York Times where that could spell really escalating premiums, and that any zone with a V on it is bad news. Now, my unit at the surf club was in a VE area under the old map. And in looking at the materials today, I guess the very good news is that all of the VE has been shifted to the other side of the dune. So the conclusion of Reed Street and the surf club is no longer in a VE, it's in an AE. And if that's true, wow, that's great. That's very good news. The very bad news is I am unaware from the old maps that I've seen that there was any VE on the Bayside. And I also can't tell you, but apparently there's an elevated hazard in AE and AO. So I'm just learning myself. But I want to put out there that if there's some way that we can be ahead of the curve and have some kind of expertise or engineering so as to know how we might mitigate or ameliorate or eliminate a VE type area, I think that's a wonderful idea from what little I know. That's why I'm very gratified to see number 14 establish a town priority slash goal to eliminate all Bayside VE special hazard areas. I endorse it. I think that's a great idea. I think if we can put our thinking hats on and try to do that, and yeah, I don't know whether it's 20 years or 100 years or indeed if at all this will occur, but I'm convinced that there's been enough talk about it, and a recent article where there's a near unanimity in the ideas of the experts at this point that this thing's happening or going to happen to some degree. So that's where I come from. That's my thought process. And to go back to that sentence at the top of page 14, I take it that there is no Oceanside VE special hazard area. I hope, and that would be great, that would be one of the things that the beach replenishment has obtained this, is that we now have a whole series of oceanfront or near oceanfront properties that have been taken out of that harm's way and that classification, which by all descriptions, as I understand it, ain't going to be cheap as the years go on. And so if there's some way that we can get ourselves a better and changed map because we're able to do stuff or at least plan stuff, I'm all for it. The second thing, quite by accident, is I think I can partially answer the last question. Three summers ago, I was in front of the surf club when the equipment arrived, complete with trailers that could go over sand because they were going down to Chincoteague where you can't drive right up on Reed Street. And there is a railroad spike near the surf club that has an X on the top of it. And they knew right where to go. They had last been there in 83 or 84, as I recall. It was the U.S. Coast and Geodetic Survey. They went right on top of that spike. They had a small boat out in the water to measure the water levels as to the time of the day and the tide and all that. And then there was a disc on top of the pole that was on top of the railroad spike, and they downloaded stuff for a good long time. And I was able to chat with them, and they explained that they were measuring sea level. And the little trivia factoid that I got out of it all was that the top of that railroad spike is 9.47 feet. And so that was three summers ago, if I remember correctly. But it was an impressive amount of equipment. And it was not since the 80s that they had done it, and that they were heading from north to south, and that they had the equipment where they could, you know, after they got finished with paved roadway, they could go over sand down in the Chincoteague, Assateague area, and continue to make those measurements down the coast using that small ship that you could see had a bunch of antennas on it. I got my binoculars out and took a look at it. So that's what I'm from firsthand discussion.
Can you shed any light on who they were?
The U.S., the United States Coast and Geodetic Survey, if I remember correctly. But they were interlinked with, it was federal, number one. And it was interlinked, and they were doing it for things like this mapping on.
That's interesting, thank you.
Yeah, that was, I mean, like I say, it took a long time for that data because it's dynamic. They wanted to make sure that the tidal elevation and you know, there was curvature of the earth and satellites and everything else involved, including that small boat. And so we had some time to chat.
Good.
Can I just offer one thing before you go away with one comment you made about the VE zones and the dunes? Mm-hmm. Don't misinterpret that. This is my first chance I had to look at these plans, this revised map. It would be incorrect to say that dunes line into VE zone per this plan. I deal with FEMA maps daily and interpreting them. What we are given to interpret zones, we engineers, surveyors, scientists, whatever, are these maps. Mm-hmm. And we have to prorate from them the location of these lines, the A lines. I think Bill can verify that. We have to interpret from these maps where these lines exist on the ground. They don't say it's a dune line. They don't say it's 500 feet from the intersection of Byard Avenue. A surveyor or a qualified engineer would have to come in and put his professional opinion as to where that line is on this map and advise Bill where that line is, and then do an elevation certificate. You'll notice that on this plan, there are some light dashed lines running kind of like perpendicular to the shore. They're section lines where FEMA has done studies.
Is this 37, 36, 35?
Yeah, they're section lines. And you can, you know, if you qualify and you have the information, you can obtain these studies that FEMA has done and these section lines. And you'll see there's a VE11 and a VE12. Well, if you get hold of these section lines that FEMA has, you'll see that maybe somewhere in between the VE is 11.5 or 11.7. And it's up to professionals to make these interpretations and then provide FEMA, Bill, and the insurance companies with the elevations that you have to build to. The VE zone is the most dangerous zone because of the wave action. Right. And your construction is different in the VE zone than an A zone, where it's an AO or AE. Your supports of your house and everything have to be built higher than in other zones. So the only comment I want to make is, don't leave here today thinking your dune is your VE zone.
I'm here to learn, and what you just said dovetails with part of what I'm a bit anxious about, and that is that there was a time, not all that many years ago, where at a normal high tide, the ocean would lap the revetment in front of the surf club.
Yeah.
Now, if that was the way it was when Sandy came through, it wouldn't be a surf club.
Sandy was phenomenal.
Yeah.
They're not mapped.
And you know, the other part of it is that I understand that up in New Jersey, there is a 22-foot minimum berm on the ocean. That's the new reality. The old flood map didn't have any kind of a berm like that. And my concern is, do we need to know or find out that a 22-foot berm doesn't quite cut it, but a 24-foot berm does? And that saves us from the VE classification on the constructed side of the dune. Is there enough, do we have, what is the height of the Dewey Beach dune right now?
The only experience I have in the situation I got is in the town of Newcastle, Delaware, where they actually ended up, the whole town's basically flooded up there.
Yeah.
Ended up building a seawall at the end of the pier, which prevents a lot of the flooding, but it didn't take the town out of the flood zone. You still have to get flood insurance, but once they get the information, your insurance is inexpensive.
So my point is, if Governor Christie says, I want a 22-foot berm, the question is, well, what does Dewey Beach want? And what do we have? And what do we need? And what number achieves what result for us? And you can apply that same reasoning now to the Bayside, where there's a new velocity area that I am reasonably sure, because I've studied it over a number of years, a number of times, that there was no Bayside velocity zone back there.
This is the first time.
This is proposed.
Right.
And we got a year to do something about it.
If they don't change the maps.
If they don't change, right.
Okay, thank you.
That's, you know, great. I think you guys have figured out where I'm worried, you know, what I'm trying to do for the town.
Okay. Yes, sir. Your name, please?
John Davidson. On your freeboard, are you limiting how much freeboard a person can have? If they want to have 3 or 4 or 5 feet of freeboard, is there a problem with that?
I don't believe that there is a problem with that, as long as you're, you know, stay within the height.
Right.
there is an issue in town right now with a property that's being was damaged during Hurricane Sandy, and they've been allowed to raise their house to what I believe FEMA has suggested it to be at, but they have asked to go higher. Of course, they're a non-conforming home on a lot, and I don't know exactly where that's at right now and how that's going to be resolved, but the town has initially at least said, no, we're going to only allow you to raise to what FEMA says. We're not going to allow you to raise any higher because your house is non-conforming. So if your house, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I thought you were done.
If your house is non-conforming, then that issue may not be exactly, my answer may not be true.
If your structure extends into the required setbacks, so if you encroach any setback, then our current code prohibits you from elevating your building. And so if you wanted to, you know, if we increase the freeboard, then in principle,
Your current code says a non-conforming house cannot be raised?
If the non-conformity is encroachment in the required yards, there's other ways it could be non-conforming and it could be elevated, but if it encroaches in the setbacks, then you would increase the non-conformity by elevating the building. And so you can't do that.
Without a variance.
Without a variance.
A non-conforming increase are you creating?
You're increasing the height at which you...
Which you're not anywhere near the height of to start with on your height restriction.
No, but you're increasing the height at which you're putting a barrier to impede air and light, if nothing else, on your neighbor.
I don't think he's talking about side yard encroachment. You're just saying in general, lifting a building within an allowable building envelope higher than the freeboard.
Yeah, well, that would be fine. Yeah. But I'm just saying if you extend beyond the building part of your lot, then if you elevate the building, you are increasing your nonconformity, and you wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, and we should mention, too, that one of the reasons why we're here today is possibly to discuss relaxation of those houses that are affected by that.
I'm involved in that house over there, and I'm a structural mover, and I've worked all over the state and most any town up and down the coast. And Dewey's Beach is the only one I've come across where a house they can say is not conforming and not be raised. And the type of oak orchard is not conforming. We've raised over 20 houses down there. I mean, they're not conforming. You know, it's in the county guidance, but it's understood. I mean, you can't go above your height restriction. You can't add on to it to increase any living space. You might be able to walk under it and have storage space, but you can't increase your living space. But they still let them raise them up, although they're not conforming.
Well, I think that it should be able to raise up if they, I mean, I'm speaking for myself alone, they should be able to do that, but you shouldn't be able to raise it to a point where you put a second level underneath of it or something like that.
You can't. Yeah. That would be non-conforming. You can't have living space under it.
You can't
expand. You might be able to walk under, store your bicycle under there, but you cannot have any living space under it.
Good. Well, we're glad you're here at this meeting.
Dewey's the only town that I know of that I've been involved with that has that restriction. And I actually see the writing of the restriction.
Actually, Seabreeze does. The development on one of my residents has the same issue. We've got a 22.5 height restriction, and there's no exception right now to go to the FEMA standard plus one.
Other houses that feel they need to raise up?
Oh, God, yeah, there are.
And it's an issue.
It's an issue.
I wanted to listen to what you had to say on it because I've been involved with two other houses right now, and I think both of those properties are not conforming. People who want to elevate get out of trouble. Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to give them the correct information to pass them on.
Good. Well, you're in the right place, hopefully. David, you want to come continue on with item, I guess, four?
First page.
So four was to say, I mean, I sense that there's no strong opposition to increasing the free board requirements. In the high hazard area, and then the question, possibly with an increase in the height, of course, a commensurate 1 foot increase in the height.
Would there be a charter change to go above the 35 feet?
I don't believe 35 feet is in the
zoning
charter. It's just in the code.
Well, there's so much controversy that we've had over 35 feet. It seems to me that we should be cautious about that. We're not opposed to that. I think we really need to have a whole public hearing on that.
Well, my sense is ultimately we're going to have, you know, a description of each of these that we want to move forward, and it's going to be advertised and available at Town Hall and posted on the web, and that there'll be...
Well, the way this reads right now is, I mean, we're not increasing any height at this point.
No.
As far as the height goes, we're just discussing.
But the next time round, should we consider that? And I mean, I don't hear anybody saying strongly opposed.
It's just some of the language, especially when you get into the... the plumbing, electricity, and things like that, the ductwork.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of general. I know normally you wouldn't misinterpret what plumbing and electrical work would be elevated, not elevated, but it's kind of like a general statement where, you know, you're saying all plumbing, and I think we've got to really look at the wording. Even FEMA has looked at their regulations and packs that they've given out and changed the language, so, you know, makes some of it sensible, some of it isn't. But I think it's really time maybe to really look at all the language and say, okay, instead of just inserting and tweaking a few words.
So you're talking about item five, basically.
Yeah, I guess I jumped to item five. Yeah.
So again, this was, the intent here was to...
Excuse me 1 second. Bill, did you want to add anything that before this discussion moves forward?
No, I think we were talking about the charter changes when we had the discrepancy over the 35-foot, you know, whether, you know, that's what you were talking about, I think, Jim.
Yes.
Yeah. When we had the zoning code was always 35-foot, but when they had the, you know, the latest charter type, you know, discussion about, especially Ruttertown, when there's no 35-foot ever without a referendum vote. I think that's what he was talking about. You know, when you're talking about adding a free board in, if we have to go to 35-foot, what do we have to do? The process. I think that's what he was talking about.
Okay. Okay, so let's jump
on that. So, Mike, on item five is basically, you know, rather than saying it's got to be designed to be dry in severe flooding, to put a minimum in.
Well,
do you want to work with me on some language on that?
If you hang your ductwork on your floor joist, and that ductwork has to be 2 feet above the base flood elevation, then your house is going to be, your living space is going to be 3 feet or more above it, and you're really getting into your height limit now.
Yeah.
And I've seen these problems in construction where people can't hang their ductwork or their electrical work or whatever. You know, I mean, it depends on... Well,
I assume this was the actual mechanical equipment that
ductwork, plumbing.
Yeah. So you'll work with me on
sure.
on this. I mean, okay.
That's you know, I have a problem with that. If elevating the freeboard, I don't have strong feelings about it. I don't really see it. If you're going to trust the maps to rely on, then you set a freeboard not projecting 2 feet above it. You know, I don't have a problem specifically with 2 feet of the floor, but you are going to get into the height problems. But if you start adding service equipment to it, you're going to get into some problems.
So six so is...
There's other alternatives than to placing that under the house, is there not?
Yeah, there's alternatives in your architectural construction, but sometimes it becomes an issue for building, and what's the value? I mean, you know, in the end, I mean, how often is it, if that 100-year storm comes, if these maps are even accurate, and you know, the accuracy of these maps are debatable, that is going to be... You're imposing hardships on home builders and people that might not really be necessary. I mean, how many houses have your ductwork hung down below and then it works it out?
I do. Works fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's because they have the crisscross construction, you can slide it right through the new construction.
Yeah.
The fall construction, you know, the typical, you know, 2x12 beams, yeah, you got a problem. Follow the five. When we say substantially improved buildings, maybe we need to define what substantially improved means.
Well, right now, it is.
I think it's at 50%.
50% of its value.
Well, we might want to go back to what that is. It might be too much, it might be too little.
Mm-hmm. Harry? Yes, sir. Your name, please?
Mark.
What was it?
Mark, M-A-R-K, Richardson.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Taking sort of maybe a quarter step back, and I have a lot of architecture and construction background, so I get all this discussion. Has there been energy looked at what other towns that even remotely look like Dewey Beach that are fairly ahead of the curve and sophisticated on these issues? Because, you know, clearly this is serious, and it's important, I think, for us to discuss it. But if there have been others out there that are way ahead of the curve, I mean, I'm no more curious. It seems like we're drilling into things here that that someone has maybe already addressed it, that either has the resources to look at it more professionally, or have cared about this subject for a long period of time, and therefore they're way ahead of the curve. I mean, I'm happy to sit and listen to the discussion about heights of ducts and all those kind of things, but I mean, this is such a serious subject that it would seem like looking at some models out there of other towns that have addressed this would be at least worth looking at. So I ask more the question, are we drilling in and putting band-aids on things, or has there been some discussion of this particular group, which obviously put a lot of energy into this? Who else has addressed this? And I'm not talking about just talking about if you down in North Carolina or up in Maine.
And we have a little bit. We at our last meeting, we had speakers from a number of different state agencies, and one presentation included the booklet entitled, help me out, what was that? The
Toolkit for Adaptation to Sea Life.
That's the model.
So we're using that, and if you look at the
existing code.
If you look at the Sea Level Rise Adaptation Toolkit and read that over, you'll see where David has used examples of what's being done in South Carolina, North Carolina, and things of that nature. So, to a certain extent, yes. Could we have done more? Sure, we could, you know, and probably will as we proceed through this. But for right now, I think we have dabbled in that, yes,
okay.
To answer your question.
I think another relevant point is what Jim Deedy's brought up, and that is that we are looking to the state of Delaware to give us some guidance here, too, and maybe at this level we're trying to understand what they're going to be telling us, hopefully, in several months. But in that sense, we've got to keep our ears open and pay attention to what other people are doing. So
they do plan to have a workshop with the town. They made that clear that they're going to set up a time to have a workshop to go over recommendations regarding our code and what potentially the states could contribute to as far as their own set of standards.
But in terms of Delaware,
this is Delaware.
I can't remember if it was the Denrek person or the DEMA person from the last meeting said we're way ahead of where most townships are in Delaware. They're only just only just beginning to deal with this. And I don't know if there are many towns like Dewey Beach nationwide. I mean, there are some, but a lot of the jurisdictions looking at it are much larger. But your point is certainly a point that's well taken.
Yeah, I would not even limit it to Delaware. I mean, this is a global problem.
It's a global problem, and it's a global,
so there's probably models that are out there that
but some of this stuff is taken from,
I understand.
You know, nationally best practices and where things seem to be going.
Mr. Thomas?
Thanks. Very briefly, 2 weeks ago, literally, I was in the Outer Banks, and across the street from my friend's house, a newly built house, we met the new owners. The neighborhood is houses up on stilts. The building inspector had come by. This is kind of a Bill Mears type story. And the platform for the coil for the air conditioner was 16 inches short of the full 5 feet that is required under their code, and which is, I believe, FEMA driven. And the the new homeowner was very happy that the building inspector had been there and said, hey, you're 3 feet 8 inches, you need to be 5 feet, because that affects the flood premium that he's able to get, because he has a compliant house that's been inspected and gets a document that says that. And so that's the kind of, like what I mentioned with Freeboard, I don't know what all these little tweaks are, but, you know, like the story with the people measuring the ocean level, I just stumbled into it literally 2 weeks ago. So, down there in the Outer Banks, this isn't new to them. thanks.
Okay. Item 6.
Okay, well, item 6 and 7 are drainage issues, which maybe we can put off for another day.
That's fine. My only comment with that, it seems like it would work fine for residential. I don't see this, the way it's currently worded, working very well for commercial in Dewey Beach.
Well, commercial is supposed to have large commercial is supposed to have a wastewater treatment plant.
Mm-hmm.
Not a stormwater. I'm sorry, stormwater treatment plant.
Again, I think this is, because this is stormwater management.
It's stormwater management, right.
Or
rainstorm, right.
Or anything that could affect stormwater, but I don't see anything happening right now, but I think we should keep in our back of our mind that Dewey Beach should really be refreshing their stormwater management policies in the event a large tract of property comes up for rezoning or for development, you know, where demolition occurs, and then now we're dealing with a lot of impervious areas and drainage, how we're going to handle it, because you got to have professionals approving it of what professionals design, and they have to be able to talk to each other and understand what's going on. So I think it's something we should keep in the back of our mind that we better get up to speed on.
But I think, part of this was also, I mean, my adding it here was driven by the discussions in town now about possibly investing a couple of million dollars in a stormwater management treatment process that would reduce pollutants released into the bay and the lakes following a major storm. Rainfall and...
Well, all new construction can be subject to that, the virus, whales, or whatever.
Right.
But
right.
You have to have the design standards that a new professional can work by that somebody can approve. That's, that gets pretty involved.
So I guess we're... So that's 6 and 7... 8 was more or less just a clarification to specifically call out BE, AE, and AO special hazard areas in the 101-6 A, B, and C, which talk about high hazard and coastal high hazard and something like general flood and coastal high hazard area, general floodplain area, and areas of shallow flooding, which respectively are the BE, AE, and AO floodplain zones, just so that when people are talking about, you know, the maps here are cast in terms of AE, AO, and VE zones, and we're talking about high hazard and coastal high hazard, and just to have all of the language in one place. And so this was, to some extent, clarification. So 10 is to redefine substantial improvement. Currently the code says in 101.15b, any modification, alteration, reconstruction, or improvement of any kind to an existing structure to an extent or amount of 50% or more of the market value shall be undertaken only in full compliance with the provisions of this chapter. And many municipalities are reducing the definition of substantial improvement to something more like 30% or one-third to accelerate, to reduce future damage and accelerate the adaptation of structures to the more stringent FEMA requirements. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, do we want to move in that direction now or at some point in the future?
I think that's the key. At some point in the future, I think that we might want to. Currently, I think that's a bit too excessive. But if we're going back to what I said earlier, if the trigger mark for this item would be when the sea level rises to a half a meter, then maybe, you know, that's what my feeling is that these items, while all good and going in the right direction, you know, we're talking about anywhere from 50 to 100 years, and without having a timing, you know, not in terms of years, okay, like say, for instance, you know, we'll put this will go into effect, this one-third rule will go into effect 25 years from now. Instead, we might decide here today that we'll put this into effect when the sea has officially risen by a half a meter or an item. So, because while we want to do it, and we want to do it, we just don't know when we want to implement it. When would it be necessary?
Should the, by outside chance, should the sea level go down?
Right. That's what I'm saying.
It's no longer an issue. No, I agree totally with you.
Okay. 11 is to amend 101.16 to extend restrictions to deck construction on the bay. We currently have language. We currently have this language in the code related to deck construction on the ocean side, with nothing at all about deck construction on the bay side. And so it would be just, no person shall commence the construction of any structure or portion thereof channelward of the Rehoboth Bay, no build line on any parcel of real property except where one or more of the following conditions exist. Now, of course, if we don't impose a no-build line on the bay, then this is a moot issue.
Are you referring to the area that is controlled by Denrec that is not controlled by the town?
No. This would be, I mean, I don't know what the, what,
when you
what
say,
Denrec does about, can you cantilever a deck over the water?
When you use the word channel word, of Rehoboth Bay and the build line. So you're talking about in 10 feet that you were proposing in the other?
Correct.
Okay.
Hold on, say that again. Channel word means exactly what?
Towards the channel.
towards the
towards the open water.
Okay. Towards the open water.
So you're basically saying you can't go past the 10-foot line.
Correct.
I think we have to look at what Denver controls because they have a certain distance by to start with.
And how would that?
And if this deck is part of a pier or dock, how do you then restrict that? Mm-hmm.
And how would it affect the proposed baywalk that's in the comp plan?
Well, that's done.
You don't want to have the baywalk so far away from the bay that it's not attractive.
That you walk on the beach.
Yeah.
Okay. 12 is to add a requirement to the code someplace, possibly 1019C, to require property owners to inform the town of any and all significant storm and or flood damage, regardless of whether or not repairs are made. Bill, do we have any requirements like this? Do people... I mean, but we're required to report to...
Well, only when they get building permits, that's the only way we know where they...
Right, but if they don't get a building permit, or if they don't report, or if they don't repair, we don't know.
No.
But you're required to report to FEMA.
Well, to make an insurance claim, it goes to the insurance company, and then, you know, that's how we keep their record from FEMA of all... repetitive damage laws.
So the town does know about repetitive damages to the people who are...
If they make claims. They don't have to directly tell the town. FEMA is the one that sends that report to us. We get that on a semi-monthly basis.
What would the penalty be if someone had damage and they didn't report? How would you penalize? What would you do? Why would you do it?
I think we'd like to keep track of it for the repetitive loss. You know, I think we'd like to know about it. The town would like to.
Well, significant storm or flood damage. You get a window blown out, or you get some shingles blown off of your house. Is that the type of damage you're talking about?
That's not the type of loss you get reported. You know, it's where there's significant damage.
Water in the house. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Water in the house. Or something.
Yeah.
That level.
So significant is kind of like open to interpretation.
Yeah, I guess it is. Well, significant may mean the 50%. You know, if it's damaged for 50% of its value, that would be significant. Yeah, that would be.
But then they
change it to a cumulative 50%. That's why they want to track these competitive losses. Mm-hmm. If they accumulate to 50%, then there's no rebuild, or you know, you'll get a check from FEMA kind of thing. So that's one of the tweaks in the program that I've heard of. That in the past, the question was the day before the storm, what was the fair market value of the property? How much does it now cost to repair it? If it exceeds 50%, no can do. Now, what I understand they want to do is if you've got a 20% and a 15%, and then you have another 15%, you've hit a 50 cumulative total, no can do.
Okay. I'd like to jump to 21, 22, and 23, because much of the next couple of things between 13 and... 16 at least are establishing town priorities and goals. 21 would be the idea is to exempt at-risk and repetitive loss structures from prohibitions in 185-60 regarding extension of non-conforming buildings and required setbacks with respect to raising to FEMA minimum base elevation plus 2 feet. So this is the issue that John Davidson talked about to a certain extent and we discussed earlier. Which seems to make sense, such that if there is a loss, they could rebuild compliant with FEMA and not be hampered by the code prohibition on elevating buildings that are non-conforming with regard to setbacks. And so that would be one thing. And the other would be to allow properties that are at risk or repetitive loss to elevate their structure proactively.
Do we have a consensus there on that?
And then there's a question of, what would the other considerations be? And I mean, and John mentioned you've got to build it the same envelope, the same footprint, the same square footage. If we're going to let somebody who's got a 50-year-old house that is not up to current building code, not zoning code, building code, you're going to say, okay, preemptively you can elevate, we're going to let you elevate to reduce your risk, to adapt to sea level rise. Would we say you could raise the structure, build an identical structure?
As long as you don't increase the footprint.
It would be footprint. Would you let them go from a 7.5-foot ceiling to a 9-foot ceiling? Because that's going to expand the envelope. What if they go to 22 foot? What if they go to a 22 foot?
What if they wanted to move the structure back?
That's a different issue.
Well, if they move it out,
because then they're
you could put some language in there. If there's a possibility, if someone were to raise the house, if there's a possibility they could make that house conform to the lot by moving it, you might.
Well, they can do that.
My
understanding is they can do that.
They can do that already.
And they don't have to be at risk. If somebody's got a building that sits in a setback and wants to move it out of the setback, they can do that. And they can make it bigger.
Could they move it out of the front yard or the bayside setback into the rear yard setback? I mean, could we give them relief in that manner?
Well, then they encroach on
someone else.
I mean, it's a fire hazard, and it reduces light and air and privacy. And
well, if it's possible to meet the side yard setbacks, like you said,
absolutely,
you're allowed to do that now and front yard. But it's a question of if there's no setbacks that they can meet, that's an issue. Mm-hmm.
Do you weigh that decision upon other building or other houses in that block? How they line up or fit in within the property? In other words, if these are non-conforming lots or houses.
Well, see, then you're also in a situation where you're non-conforming. You got more than one unit on a single-family house that comes into play. That you've got three units on a lot that none of them really meet any kind of setbacks.
Would a site plan requirement submitted to you and the planning commission prior to building permit be smart to do so? They're like, we can take a look at it and determine whether it's good for the neighborhood or it meets the code well enough.
See, that's the thing, they go to board of adjustment now, I guess. That's a...
It's a variance. I mean, it would be a variance.
For variance, yeah. So we're proposing, we're talking about a lot of hypothetical possibilities.
Well, and so the question, I mean, that's a good question, Mike. So would we view this as a basically a conditional use so that they would come before the...
With a site plan,
planning
use. Yeah, within... Yeah,
so at least somebody looks at it and says,
if somebody looks at it and they look at the merits or the problems it might cause with the neighborhood, so it basically fits in.
Are you talking about them going higher with the freeboard, or you just told you you can't restrict them from raising out the flood zone, can you?
Well, if
we're just throwing around a lot of
ideas, and if the town's code requires a 1-foot freeboard, then they do a 1-foot freeboard, and if it's a 2-foot freeboard, they could do 2-foot. But if they're still in the setback, I don't think we would let them go any higher than that.
2 foot to about 3 foot, their insurance would go down about another 18%.
If they can do that and not sit in the setback, then you know that would be
all right. Sit in setback.
Well,
why wouldn't you allow them to go higher if they can still maintain the height limit in your side front yard?
I would agree. I have a hard time with that. I think you should be.
Why wouldn't you? I mean,
well, I wouldn't want my neighbor to raise his building. So you know, he's currently on the ground, one story building, and he's gonna, you know, raise his building, so he's 20 feet up in the air and he's looking down in my bedroom windows and bathroom windows, and he's blocking the sun and the light and the air. And
so he could take a one-story house and tear it down and build a three-story.
Not in the setback.
Not in the setback, but he'd still be blocking you.
That's his right. And it's, you know...
So it, you went down and went backwards. You take a one-story house with missing houses that are getting raised. Majority of it is.
Yeah. Where I come from, light and air and privacy. Where I come from, light and air and privacy are you know, really important, and drivers of zoning code. You know, you can't block, you can't build a wall up against my house. And you know, to some extent, this is building a wall up against a wall that's not permitted by the zoning code today.
The other thing too is people that have built homes and have built conforming homes next to non-conforming homes may have a rightful issue. If we let them build up to 35 feet and not follow setbacks, and then, I mean, they understood that that was a non-conforming, that the world has been, he can't expand. So, I mean, there are some legitimate issues that would have to be taken into consideration before we start waving everything away at this point. I think if you could just build to the existing, if you want to raise your house 2.5 feet to meet whatever the FEMA plus 2 is, that's great. I think that's a wonderful idea. If you want, if your house is 30 feet, I don't think we want you to go to 40 feet or 36 feet right off the bat in a non-conforming area. I mean, we've had pretty much to that. I think this gives people the opportunity to improve their homes, to meet the standards within a reasonable height limit.
That raises a good question. So you have a house that currently is built on grade, where grade is at an elevation of 3 feet in an A6 zone. So it's, you know, Bayside.
Right.
First floor gets flooded regularly, and so you're going to say you can elevate the building, but the roof line's already 35 feet. So they're going to raise it. They're going to elevate it 4 feet.
Right, right. I mean, this is a very touchy issue.
This is similar to what I brought up when we first started our meeting.
Yeah.
Are we going to extend that? And I think you almost have to. Because if not, I think, Bill, we could probably add to this a little bit. I think if not, I think everybody's going to end up in two stories, and it's going to be real tough to get three anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Replacing architectural standards on properties on through zoning, what would be done if we wouldn't allow them to elevate within the allowed height and envelope, and basically saying architectural standards, because you want that house to blend in with your house next door and everything else. You're now imposing architectural standards on it, in my opinion. I think they should be allowed to build within the envelope and the allowable height, if they want to raise it up. I mean, it's, you know, if it doesn't agree with your neighbor next door, I mean, as long as they build a nice house, that's the way it goes.
But as long as they meet the setbacks, that's not a problem.
If it's as long as within the setbacks, yeah.
It's not a problem.
Yeah. But
I think my question is, so you have a house that's, the roof is 35 feet, sits on the ground, it gets flooded a couple of times a year. I think the town I would like to think the property owner would. Certainly the town would like them to, and FEMA would like them to elevate the structure.
Right.
But if they elevate the structure, do they have to tear off the top 5 feet?
Unless they got a variance, they can't exceed that height.
They
have to do something. change the tile style of the house.
Okay. Right. They shouldn't have to, because if you built at 35 feet 10 years ago and you put it at ground level, and if 10 years ago you were compliant, now FEMA's coming along and changing the rules, and we're changing the rules. That house was 35 feet, it was in compliance. But now if the tide is coming up and you've got to go up, you should be able to go up.
Okay, well, and I will remind everybody, basically, we're going to come back with items like this fleshed out a little more and talk about it a little more, and then have a public hearing on, we will have a public hearing on whatever language we get to, and that will go to the commissioners, who will have a public hearing on specific language.
In your form here, Dave, the one thing that I found that I think
number
is kind of missing is a definition of what hard armoring is.
Okay.
You have a definition of soft armoring.
Well, look at 23.2a.
You've given some examples, but is that the definition?
I can get a definition of hard armoring.
Because that's just giving me examples. I kind of understand.
I mean, the references I get kind of define it by example rather than define.
So definition of what?
Of hard armor.
As opposed to soft armor.
Hard armor would be vertical bulkhead.
Things like that.
Well, if you don't do hard armoring along the bay, you might just scrap an idea of protecting yourself against sea level rise, because that's one of the logical things you're going to do is put a bulkhead along there. And
well, you know, some municipalities will put up dunes and build out wetlands.
But
and,
along the bay, I mean, you're just not going to do that. You're going to...
Now, why wouldn't you do that?
Along the bay?
Yeah.
I mean, why wouldn't you pump sand in there and create a dune line in the bay?
Cost. Rather than building a volcano at a height to protect the sea level surge or wave action, VP action.
Actually,
there are other issues with building dunes. Access to the bay at that point becomes a big issue.
Yeah, access to the bay. Yeah.
And pumping. I mean, you have to put a 6-foot wall across all of the street ends on the bayside and catch
the problem
pumps.
Of flooding. How do you discharge?
Anything you do it's going to cause level, to prevent sea level rise is going to cause shotgun problems.
That's right.
Yeah, it's going
to
be a big problem.
So 22 is to amend 185.59 related to damage or destruction of non-conforming buildings, basically, and to prohibit repair or reconstruction in essentially the same configuration and require elevation or relocation to comply with FEMA base floods plus 2-foot standards. So basically, if there's, and I think this would be caveated, not just damage, but storm-driven or flood damage, and also to caveat it in any coastal hazard area, such that if you do have loss, that you couldn't rebuild it, even if. You couldn't rebuild it to the same configuration. Now, I guess the question is, you need a trigger of at what level? We're not talking about a window being broken and you can't replace the window, but we're talking about 30%, 50% damage.
And I think also there would be another case for the trigger of
at what time.
At what time would you begin that type of enforcement, you know? Half a meter,
this is kind of related to the thing we put a half meter on, and so and 23 would be to amend 185.52 to prohibit hard armoring of bay and lakefront properties. Which is something that is being done in lots of municipalities, and the feeling being that if I put a bulkhead or something in front of my property in a storm environment that's going to direct the water into your property. And municipalities are trying to wrestle with the legal issues of, you know, so I build the bulkhead, you get flooded, can you sue me or can you sue the town because the town gave me a permit to build that? And ultimately, I think the feeling is that a lot of hard armoring is, you know, is not good.
I think that a lot of the hard armoring was prohibited for environmental reasons more than the lawsuits. I mean, take that lawsuit to court and good luck with it. Proving that your bulkhead damaged their property, you go have a hard road. A lot of those reasons that, you know, environmental agencies in the states, it's for environmental reasons. You know, the debris and the things that feed fish. But in an urban area like Dewey, it is urban. I think a restriction that hard would be a problem. I mean, I can see along open shorelines and, you know, farms and whatnot where hard armoring could be limited. But you have areas of Dewey Beach that are very urban now. And they do the job, and to say no to them, what impact, or yes to them, what impact would that really have on the bay environment versus the integrity of the land that is protecting, and even the neighbors, because the neighbor could eventually join in and make his property bulkheaded. So I think weighing possible environmental damage against supporting the properties or the integrity of the property that's built on, in my opinion, that in an urban area, the hard armoring should be allowed.
I mean, would you allow, I mean, most of the private property on the bayside's hard armored now.
Yeah.
Not all of it, but most of it.
Sure.
And it's probably at a 3-foot elevation, give or take half a foot. I mean, that, would you let them build a 6-foot?
Well, first of all, they'd have to get approval from DENREC how they want to build it and where and the height. The town wouldn't have a say in that, I don't think. You know, you could try to impose a stronger restriction than what DENREC even has. Would I have them build a 6 feet?
I don't think it's a good idea.
I don't think so, but I wouldn't prevent them from putting hard armoring in a logical height that would support the their yard and you know, their house and, you know, any future erosion that could be occurring. It's an urban area. I mean, I can see the stone revetments and building, putting in, redesigned, you know, wetlands to extend the beachfront. But in an urban area, I think that's a that's too much of a hardship.
Would you put this as a conditional, basically as a conditional use, so it would come at least before the Planning Commission?
I think that's a logical.
Or
as Planning Commission.
And then you could put conditions on it. For instance, you know, at what point in time would that be removed? You know, when inundation occurs, okay? You know, let's look 100 years down the line. Pull that out. You know, it must be removed. You know, at the time you abandon your house and move inland, you know? I mean, if this is real, it's going to happen. Inundation will occur. We can't leave these hard armored things in place.
It could be a condition.
Okay.
That at the end of the mean high sea level, water level exceeds the height of the bulkhead. Pull it.
Well, yes, sir. Can I get your name, please?
Carlin Williams, Salt Ridge Beach. Yep. I'm also a realtor. And, you know, that's a part of this whole discussion that I guess at the next meeting we'll be able to focus and go meet the table of ideas. But, you know, property owners and values, you know, let's say that you 7 out of 10 houses have bulkheads that are 2 to 3 feet, and if there's other 3 feel that someone's buying a house that doesn't have a bulkhead on the bay, just to being not being allowed to do that because we have a code, even though DENREC might allow it, could certainly prohibit a value of property changing hands. I mean, I think we should definitely keep open the idea that bulkhead, if 7 out of 10 are now, as you use, Mike, urban areas along our bay here, I think we should definitely consider the future of building here. I mean, I was up in Massachusetts last week on Cape Cod, and there's one community that's still selling lots, and the residents can't get to their houses at high tide. They have to wait until the tide goes down. And it's a very nice community. They're building 700,000 to $1 million houses, and green flies everywhere. People are building these houses, and they don't mind the inconvenience of not getting to their houses. And they have, you know, built their lands and have roads. And the comment earlier about what are other communities doing, and again, I think that's in order to keep us viable and looking all things future, too, I think we have to make sure we don't collide with the feelings of what people are doing. I mean, your comment, when are we going to institute some of these things when the sea rises 3 inches, 30 inches, 1 meter, whatever, they create fears also in people. So I think we really have to look at those issues too. It's hard enough selling things with, I mean, when this first came out early in the winter about the new sea level rise, and we were having 13 meetings, I think, up and down the state, you'd be surprised how many people become non-buyers in an area, even though they really, the only fear is the fear of the unknown, and we're creating more unknowns too. And I know you all realize that because you're here analyzing this back and forth. So I just want to make sure that we look at not closing off all the options, because everybody's sensible. I mean, you know, as far as understanding that no one controls why the water's rising or hopefully going out, getting lower, but we really have to look at property values and how people look at these properties that they've owned here for all these years as a source of income for retirement or to move up to a larger, nicer home too in the same area.
Now, what is your opinion, Mr. Williams, about, you know, if we put these, let's fast forward for a moment. Like, we've had 5-6 meetings here on this, and we've come up with a amendments that would affect properties. Wouldn't you agree that that would have to, real estate world would have to start, you know, including that in the disclosures, that you, not only are you in a floodplain, but you, this town has this if for your property in the future after inundation or something like that?
Well, I think in our association, in the state, well, there is some movement right now going forward to that language of suggesting that there's no control of the future, what might happen with FEMA introduced regulation of, again, right now with Barrett Beach, you know, I have a listing in Barrett Beach, you know, that can be, that's slow enough to get people to look at, but now, what would you think? I can't get subsidized insurance, you know, again, the people are saying, how much is insurance? 9,000, 20,000, some, many homes can have still not gotten final commitments for some flood insurance this year in certain coastal areas. So I think the disclosures is going to happen, and I think they probably should, because again, everybody wants the CYA, and you know, going forward, you know, I don't want to sell something today that 4 years from now floods out and they want to come back and go after my $4,000 commission and I'm sued for, you know, $1 million. So there's disclosure and more information we get out, and that this is real and happening. I think a lot of people believe it's real and happening, but a lot of people still will turn to attorneys to say, well, I wasn't explained enough. So I think that we're on the right track trying to show our parts that we are definitely below sea level and we're definitely in a danger area in a lot of parts of our beach town. But that doesn't mean that it will ever happen to a degree. And again, the rebuilding, I think, is the part that would be the most harmful to people buying originally. If they can't rebuild or reposition within the codes, I think that language has to be very clear and very elementary, so that people don't have to come to town and get explained to by a special attorney waiting to explain it, because it can't be that complicated. I mean, when you tell someone they can't rebuild and the storm happens this year, you just bought it, you really would feel pretty angry towards everybody involved. So Well, that answers your question, Harry.
But I think Garland, I'd like to think you would agree that if the town were to put some triggers in the code saying when the, you know, if the sea level goes from, you know, whatever it is now, mean high tides, 1.5 feet to 2.5 feet, that these things will happen. I mean, that takes all the uncertainty away from you and your client. You know that when the sea level goes, when mean high tide goes to 2.5 feet, that this set of code is going to, you know, snap into place, and if you don't believe the sea level is going to rise, then you don't have to worry about it. But you know, at some point in the future, you know, it is or it isn't going to happen. So we've reduced some of the uncertainty.
Well, but I would also say that,
and it's not like we come to the table in 10 years and say, oh, you know, it's 2.5 feet now, and so we're going to make these changes. And you say, well, I didn't know we were going to do this.
No, I think everything should be underway from where we came with the size, and now we go to a 3-foot freeboard. We'll raise our houses higher again. I mean, until the roads become the issue, I think that people are going to stay and live here for as long as, and I gave you the example, in high tide, people can't go to these houses that they're, I mean, very successful people are spending, you know, up to $1 million plus on this island, which I wouldn't be there because of the green flies, but you know, they can't get there twice a day for about 2 hours to two and a half hours. So
not too many years ago, South Bethany, there's oceanfront homes. They had to put plank from where the road washed out to get into their house.
Right.
Those homes have been resold over the years. People are adjusting.
So I think, you know, everyone's willing to take the risk. It's about how well we protect our town from suits. And I think if anybody wants to spend money with all the caveats fully disclosed, I think between our associations, the real estate association, as well as our town, I think we're all on the right path to make sure. But are we going to answer everyone's questions about rebuilding or reconfiguring the structure or how high they can go up? Like your question, I don't know. I think as long as they can get into the town, you know, 18 hours a day to get to their house, I don't think most people will really care about the water height. As long as it's not a storm here, you know, it's an enjoyable, wonderful place.
Any other comments?
I got one more.
Yes, sir.
When you're wording it, you guys, how you going to handle your non-conforming? If you want, if somebody raises it up, and you're going to say base flood elevation plus 2 feet. I think we got to have, if you end up holding to that stringent, I think you need to have a little play in there. Because, you know, I don't want to raise the house up. And I got to be 2 feet above base flood elevation. All of a sudden, I set it at 26 inches. And we have two-inch issue. I don't want to end up in a lawsuit somewhere where somebody's saying, well, now we're 2 inches too high. I think you need some water. You got to have some play in there.
A range, you know.
You got to have a little range. I mean, it's always a safe factor. We always try to set them a few inches higher to protect ourselves when we're going to.
Okay.
And I think in your wording, it could be a little tricky there. If somebody wouldn't play hard for it, it could cause a problem. You have a little range. If you end up holding to your non-conforming lots on advanced base road plus 2 feet, I think you gotta have a little play also.
So Bill, how do you deal with the right? So everything's in a floodplain, it has to be built with a first floor or whatever at a certain elevation. So do they have a surveyor come in and certify that it's above that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then you get an elevation certificate.
A new elevation certificate for it.
And so this gentleman's issue is you're quite happy if they build 2 inches higher than required.
Well, I mean, you know, within 2 inches, yeah. But I mean, when you're talking 2 or 3 feet or 4 feet, that becomes an issue because then you get into a situation where if there's a pair of steps coming down and a person's in a setback area, or, you know, the steps could wind up not even on their property to get them in their house. See, that's another consideration that you got to take with the exact location of this dwelling with if you're allowing them to increase the flood level. Even at the flood level, they could encroach over their property lines in certain situations.
Okay.
So, you know, every time you go up a foot, you got to take all these considerations into effect.
Yes, sir.
Can I ask Bill a question? Bill, the surveys for height, they're pretty, that's like golden now with the satellite mapping. I mean, there's really no issue in the right height. People raising up saying, hey, we're now at 2 foot above the floodplain for this block in the street, right? I mean, so we don't need that. You know, there's a lot of things. You could have a second survey that's a town survey or who has to be in every survey field for these new houses. This new,
The owner has to produce the information to Bill that he's building the lines.
Yeah.
And you can measure the finished floor elevation in practicality relative to your benchmark within hundredths of a foot relative to your benchmark elevation. That doesn't mean you're necessarily 11.01 sea level relative to your benchmark. You can measure to within hundredths of a foot. So, and the owner has to pay a surveyor to do those precise measurements. The surveyor fills out the elevation certificate, certifies to it, puts his professional liability on the line, and says, here, Bill, this is where the elevation of that house is. Bill takes it, looks at it, makes sure that it complies to his building permit and the FEMA codes.
To the FEMA.
Now, one municipality I work in, before you get a CO, you have to fill out surveyor has to fill out a certification form certifying to the elevation of the house versus the approved, what they call lines and grades plan or site plan. And there is a tolerance of a tenth of a foot or so. If it exceeds that, they have to resubmit a new site plan or lines and grades plan showing the as-built versus what Bill approved. If it doesn't comply to code, whether it's building code or your grading code or whatever, you have an illegal house, you don't get a CO. You got to get a court appointed adjustment to get approval of your encroachment or your violations before Bill gives you a CO. Isn't that how we get it?
That's correct.
So Bill, at your own risk, stay within a tolerance. But if it doesn't come out that way, you're stuck if the Board of Adjustment doesn't give you a variance.
Well, sending your language, you need a tolerance.
Yeah,
I've worked in municipalities that do give a tenth of a foot of tolerance. If you exceed that, you're in violation. You don't get a CO.
Is that dealing with a height restriction?
Height and building. And placement of the house or block.
It could be lower. Like in the flood, it could be lower.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking higher all the time.
It could be lower, right? I mean, that's why we try to...
If you're lower, you're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we try to push
the town can't issue you a permit and comply with their agreement with FEMA.
Yes, sir.
And all the surveyors around here are using a benchmark, I think, south of town for all their calculations of elevations. There's one benchmark that every surveyor uses in this general area.
That's the nearest one. We have a benchmark on the Inlet Bridge. We transfer mm-hmm. Yes, I can have a crew up on the Delaware Bay and give you an elevation here in town. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's simple GPS.
Yes, sir.
David Thomas here. When I was down at the Outer Banks at the Hoodie Cat around the Collins and Harbor, and very much the fashion down there, when you get a property that's on the sound, is to have operating engineers come out with dump trucks and bulldozers and you beef up the lot. I think one of the panel members alluded to, there's a town up in New Jersey that literally wants to raise every roadway in town 6 or 8 feet. That was reported in the New York Times. I've been having trouble getting my head around now are we going to encourage people to beef up properties? Like that, with fill that they bring in?
I don't know if the town has you're filling in floodplain, and some municipalities don't allow you to fill floodplain.
Right.
I don't know if the town and the construction allows you to do that.
So that's the policy question.
Filling in floodplain.
And what he's talking about, in the county allows
people to build up their lots to get to an elevation where they don't have to increase the height of the house off the lot, increase the lot first to get to that height. Where in this town right here would be very difficult because where you create more drainage and problems and enough, you know. But I think that's what you're talking about.
Yes, the policy question is, are we going to allow that? Is it good? Is it bad? I know that when I sail over to Smith Island and Tangier Island, you can see where people have erected pads that they park their cars on so that the cars are up 30 inches and the house may get wet, but at least the car is saved. Are we going to prohibit that kind of activity? Just to let you know what went off across the ceiling of my bedroom one night, I understand that the flood gauge is at the end of Venetian Drive. It's about a quarter of a mile from where the Bayard pumps are. And one of the problems there is that there's not hard armoring. There's soft armoring. There's a berm there. The problem with the berm is when you get up to a measurement of over 3.1, so call, we have an elevation of 3.5, now you've got a flow of water that comes across Sweet Street from outside the boundaries of the town into Bayard Avenue and floods it. So one of my ideas was, is there going to come a day that when you drive across Swedes or Salisbury Street from that part outside of town, there's a sign that says, "Welcome to Dewey Beach," and you actually are driving over a hump in the road that barricades, stops that, arrests that flow of water, and that when you look down from that berm in the roadway, you can see where the town of Dewey Beach has put up a hard barricade. If you go to downtown Norfolk, right there where the Maritime Museum is in the Battleship Wisconsin, that's exactly what they did, what they have there. There's a wall that's 8 or 10 feet high. And you can see where, when there's a flood call, out of the pockets of the wall, they draw together floodgates. And that saves the town from drowning. Now, that stops all the traffic, but there isn't going to be any traffic in 6 feet of water anyway. Now, is that the kind of thing that we're thinking of? And then how would you have access in and out of marinas and piers and whatnot? I mean, and I realize this sounds outlandish, but I even have a thought. Maybe the answer, I understand the answer on the ocean side. The bigger the berm, the better. If it's 30 feet high, oorah, you know. On the bay side, you know, are we to the point where we really need a floodgate from the tip of Thompson Island that goes over to where the submarine towers are so that there's an artificial berm and then there is a floodgate just like protects London? You know, how much is that going to cost? You know, who's going to swing for that? But I am worried that that's where we're ended, that would be the real answer, but look, this feature function ain't cheap. It's been hundreds of millions if you add it all up. And, well, maybe not hundreds, but it's over 100 million at this point. For these, you know, maybe that is the answer. I don't know, but I'm glad that at least the ball, you know, because, you know, there's some discussion here about this whole laundry list of what we should do, what we can do, what we shouldn't do, what we can't afford, what is realistic, and so on and so forth. And, you know, I might only be around for a little bit more, but, you know, I don't think this is a situation that's going to go away.
I agree. I think it's a good start. I think
yeah.
we're, yeah. To that end, do we have any further discussion?
Next meeting. Next meeting.
Yeah. So right now, in conclusion, I would like to set up a date and time for the next meeting. Anybody got anything?
Yeah.
do we want to meet it in September, or are we further out than that?
How far weeks from now would be good for me?
Sometime towards the end of September, then?
4 weeks. 4 weeks from now. That'll give me a week or two to get the notes together and get them distributed and put together a new draft. And
about the 28th of September?
Is that a Saturday?
Yeah. It's the last Saturday in September.
Sounds good. Good for me. Life Saving Station
would
should be open.
I would suggest that we wait for the anything from the Delaware study, but you know that's relevant to what we're doing here. I don't know. I mean, just to say it's due in the fall, maybe it's in the spring.
I think it's probably going to be very late fall.
So I'm interested in getting connected with what is Delaware doing in on our timeline, but I don't think they're very predictable in terms of what might be done. But with that said, I think we can go ahead with the scheduling that you're talking about, the end of September or whatever.
Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to be sure you were aware that the town commissioners' organizational meeting is currently scheduled for September 28th. I don't know what time. I'm just alerting you to that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. 1 o'clock.
Do we have any sense for when their meeting is? It a morning meeting?
I assume it's a 10 o'clock meeting.
Is it?
Yeah. It'll be a 10 o'clock.
Maybe. It'll be a short one.
Yeah. How about 1 p.m. then? Okay. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, everyone. Thanks for your attendance. Thanks for your participation.